Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome back to Money Mania, where we're talking tax season and what to do with that refund. If you really want your tax refund to have a positive impact, I'm bullish on Ohio's 529 plan. I always say, invest in something you love. Well, there's nothing we love more than our kids. So invest in their future and let your tax refund help. For as little as $25, you can get started today at collegeadvantage.com.
It's time for the Draft Dudes Podcast.
What's better than this?
Your hosts, the Draft Dudes themselves and co-founders of the Draft Network, Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino.
Guys being dudes
on the Draft Dudes Podcast. And it starts now.
Guys being dudes here on the Draft Dudes Podcast. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs. We're your hosts. Chris Schubert floating around producing this thing. We're all from the Draft Network, and we are brought to you by Bet Online, the number one spot for all your sports wagering information. You can find everything over there, NFL and college football, but they also have Major League Baseball, combat sports, tennis, golf, esports, Vegas casino games, live in-game betting, you name it. You can find it over there on Bet Online. Super easy to navigate website that you can check out on your desktop or your mobile device. And of course, we have a deal for you. Use our promo code BELIEVE50 and you'll get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, that's BLEAV50. It's Bet Online and it's where the game starts. Kyle, happy National Vodka Day, National Taco Day, and National Cinnamon Roll Day to you.
Couple good options. Run the first one by me again.
Vodka. I know I said it weird.
Okay.
Came out weird. Sorry.
Vodka. It's like,
not
you
sure
sound like
what
it
happened there, man.
Was Russian or something. Vodka. Hey, Chris, are you concerned about the Mets at all?
Yeah, so we didn't address this on the show yesterday. And I'm not feeling great.
Okay. All those happy days in May, though.
They're gone. Nope. The happy days. Y'all! They do not exist anymore.
Okay, I will not harass you anymore with the New York Mets.
But you don't have the Braves won they're going to win the division, so it's over. It doesn't matter. You're fine.
Right, but it's the payoff of the bit, and the whole bit goes back to overly excited about games in April and May because baseball's too long. Right, we should have stopped the count a long time ago in baseball as far as the NLE standings go, and they didn't, and here we are. Happy Vodka Day, I guess.
I mean, it's Taco's
the best thing.
Tacos on
a Tuesday. Right? I mean,
yeah,
like
Taco's the best thing on there.
That is a sign. Taco Tuesday. Right.
That's what I'm saying. That's the one.
What? So what happens next year when it's not on Tuesday?
Then we can't celebrate. Yeah,
is it a moving thing? Can it stay on the Tuesday of this week every year?
Let me see if I can learn a little bit more about this holiday. I will say this. I tried a vodka tonic for the first time in my life and I enjoyed that.
Why do you say it like that? Like, I just don't.
What did I say?
Like I just don't know why. Like, no, there's just like a weird. I don't know what it is. There's just a weird pronunciation that you have with it. It's vodka.
Like, it's just vodka.
I don't know what to say, man.
It's too much vod. He goes, yeah, vodka. Like,
right. What do you say?
Vodka. It's vodka. Vodka.
Vodka.
He went the wrong way. He leaned further into the VUD. I don't have vodka down here. I do have Captain Morgan. Jacko Blast, little pumpkin thing. Found it in my bar. It's been here for about 3 years. I'm going to check the expiration date, but as long as I'm not too expired, then I'll probably have a little sip here on the show. Celebrate an alcohol day.
It's every October 4th, so this is a rare occurrence that it is on a Tuesday, so please celebrate accordingly.
That's like once every 7 years.
Yeah, take advantage. Yeah. Get your tacos in.
NFL All Word right. Association, Scout Speak, Ray Garvin joining the program today. That's what you have here on a Tuesday.
Can't wait.
So, we start with NFL Word Association here. We have all the games to go through and get the one word. And so, just so everybody knows, normally we do this on Monday. Well, we gave Joe an extra day with all the
to
games.
To prep.
God bless it.
To prep.
So he could prep and he could come. So I know everyone's like, oh, Word Association Monday. No, we gave Joe an extra day. And so we're going to put it on Tuesdays now. Let's see how he lives up to the task.
So he could just stew on everything for another 24 hours.
Didn't do it. My preparation is no different. We're going to see what happens as we go.
This should go swimmingly then. Yeah. That's great.
Can't wait. I tried to help us with some. Yeah, okay. We'll start with the London game. The Vikings beat the Saints 28-25.
Double doink.
Yeah.
Off to a rousing start. A rousing start. Very, very entertaining final 5 minutes of that game, though. I think it's a shame Will Lutz couldn't punch the 61-yarder through. I'm trying my best, Joe. I'm expecting you're going to have something to add here when I'm done.
I mean, like, it was
Justin Jefferson's a monster, too.
No, but hold on. It was the first game of the day. There were no other games on. I could understand if it was a game and you said, hey, guys, listen, like, didn't get to watch a ton of this game. It was part of Red Zone. I flipped through it. Like, I could get that. This game was all by its lonesome. It was by itself. I know
it's because I'm trying
it.
Too hard. I'm trying too hard to like have something super amazing and profound to say where I just needed to say double doink or just said Justin Jefferson or
right.
just said
Simplify
Za'Darius Smith or you know what I mean?
We're right. going to run a Phil Longo offense. Just go to the first read. If it's not there, go to the second read. Let's move on.
Okay. All right. No pre-snap motion.
No pre-snap motion. We're not getting creative.
We're not even going to change. It's the same formation every play too.
Right. Just
I'm like Nathaniel Hackett out here, you know? I need a coach in my ear telling me what to do.
Who's got worse clock management, Nathaniel Hackett or Joe? We'll save that for another time. The Falcons are helping me win a bet with Joseph J. Marino because they beat the Browns 23-20 as they get their second win of the season.
Forgettable. This was the game that happened that I forgot happened and had to be like reminded later on in the day that the Browns and Falcons played a football game and somebody won it.
Negligence is my word. Kyle Pitts, one catch. We're doing it again. We're doing it again.
The dub.
It's not fantasy football. We're trying to win football.
Jared, I don't care. I am physically incapable of caring less. It's bad process. And you will lose more games than you win if you allow this to continue to be dictated to you. Did you spend a top five overall pick on a decoy? Because if you did, shame on you. Shame on you.
The Cowboys.
And I hate that they won because now it's reinforcing the behavior.
That's right. We don't need to get him involved because we keep winning football games. The Cowboys beat the Commanders 25-10.
Can't beat Cooper Rush. 4-0, right?
Very good, Joe.
Here's what I love. We brought Joe to the sideline. We said, Joe, snap it together. You got to play better. And Joe
did.
Come out and he's
played
better. He's
played better.
Silent count. We're going silent count. We're playing ball.
I guess mine is hot seat. Hot seat. Quarterback's on the hot seat. Head coach on the hot seat. Mm. Washington is, I mean, they're more talented than this, right? How many points did they score in this game? They scored 10 points in this game?
10, yes.
Yeah. They are a much more talented football team than what they are showcasing, and I don't know how much longer we can stem the tide. I know we don't need the bad PR of firing a good man in Ron Rivera in season, but at the same time, like, geez Louise, guys, it's time to wake up.
I worry that they have to take a big swing, though, like a big swing. Or what do? Do you hire Leslie Frazier? Or you know what I mean? Like that type of hire?
it's a fair point, Joe. It's a fair point. I talked about on the TD and Daily podcast yesterday that the Cowboys, like the Philadelphia Eagles, should be the talk of the NFC because they're 4-0, and we'll get to them a little bit later. But this Dallas Cowboys team, to survive what they have had to deal with injury-wise, offensive line, and then their quarterback, to be 3-1, is setting up very nicely. Do you know who they play next week? If they beat the Rams this week, next week, Sunday Night Football, they play the Eagles. Like, you want to talk about a marquee matchup already in Week 5.
The other side of the fence, here's the next block of games for 1-3 Washington. Okay. Home against the Tennessee Titans, at Chicago Bears. Okay. Green Bay Packers, at Indianapolis Colts. You'd probably like to get that one at home. The 3-1 Minnesota Vikings at Philadelphia Eagles. How many wins we see on this? 1.5?
2?
Yeah. Maybe 2.
So, I mean, that'll put you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, we could be looking at 2-8 through the first 10.
Changes are coming. In the Big 12 game of the week, the Seattle Seahawks beat the Detroit Lions 48-45.
Studs. It's a good week to have Jamal Williams and TJ Hockenson fantasy stock.
To me, this is just defense. Like the Lions in this defense, man, you can't give up 48 to Geno and this Seahawks team. You can't do it.
Well, to be fair, they gave up 41, and Draft Dudes alumni Tariq Woolen had a pick 6, to be fair.
Damn right he did. But, like, they're not stopping anybody. They're not. Seattle was 9-12 on third down. Like, Detroit, I like what you got going on offense, but, my God, your defense is going to keep you from being a decent team.
141 points allowed. They are dead last in yards, dead last in points conceded thus far this season, while also being number 1 in yards and points scored offensively.
It's bad.
I told you. Big 12 game of the week. By the way, it's a great week to have swapped Kyle, made a trade in fantasy and traded Kyle Pitts for TJ Hockenson. It's a great week to have done that.
Chris, really, there you go.
I did it 2 weeks ago, and Hockenson's been infinitely better in the 2 games that I've had him since the entire time I've had Pitts. So, you know, great times were had. The Titans.
Quick timeout. I'm sorry. I just saw the statistic.
You have 3 of them, so you used one.
I have 2 of them now because I just used one. Detroit also dead last in third down percentage defensively, 53% conversion rate, and 13 of 15 opposing trips into the red zone have resulted in touchdowns. That is an 87% touchdown conversion rate against the Lions defense that is also dead last.
Titans beat the Colts 24-17. They tried to give this one away.
Chigo got a tutty. Got a tutty. And maybe Derrick Henry is not dead, right? Like, couple good games here coming after week 2. Where
would you believe Derrick Henry still rushed for lower rushing yards than expected based on expected yards per rush? No. Yeah, I did believe he rushed for like 199 yards or something. It was like 7 yards under expected yards on his carries, according to Next Gen Stats.
22 carries, 114 yards, and a touchdown for Derrick Henry on the ground.
114. Yesterday. I was off by a schmidge.
Yeah, just a quick margin. Yeah,
about an extra 80 yards. Sadness. AFC South sadness is currently in full swing with 2-2 teams, the Texans and the Colts at 1-2-1.
The AFC South is somehow better and worse than we thought it was going to be.
Right. Which is an impressive feat.
The New York Jets beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 24-20.
Zach's back.
Kenny picked it.
Oh, see this? That was the best one we've had so far, gentlemen. Everybody.
Kenny picked it.
Did you know that Pro Football Focus did not credit Kenny Pickett in his 3 interceptions with 1 turnover worthy play? They said,
you know what? He threw 3 interceptions.
The first one was probably a turnover worthy play.
It was a bad decision. It was not a bad throw. Chase Claypool hung him out to dry.
You got to lean a little bit more because he's got it.
I understand
he throws
that.
The ball to the
no, he doesn't.
Line.
There's a safety out there. there's a safety and a defender in, that's trailing the play. You threw it to two defenders deep in coverage. I don't think it's a good decision.
It's a bad throw because he underthrows it. Turnover-worthy play. That one's turnover-worthy. The other two, one gets tipped, and the other one's at the end of the game. Like, who gives?
Yeah, I don't blame him for the Hail Mary. I don't blame him for the Hail Mary.
In the sequel to the 49ers Broncos Sunday night extravaganza, the Giants and Bears, they performed their version of setting football back 20 years in terms of offensive game. The Giants beat the Bears 20-12.
Who gives a shit?
Wow. Guy
uses the How's that for word association?
I mean, neither of these teams have losing records through 4 weeks.
And Joe, what do you think the combined win total is of for these two teams at the end of the year?
Yeah, they have five. So they have five wins right now. What's their combined win total at the end of the year? Because again, this was the topic of the TD and Daily podcast yesterday. Of the three NFC East teams that are above 500, this is the phoniest of the bunch because of how they're winning games, because of the schedule at the beginning of the year, and what's coming.
You're not getting flowers for the Titans imploding on themselves and blowing a 3-score lead and beating the Panthers and the Bears at home.
And their one loss is to the good team in the Cowboys. So it's like
with their backup quarterback. With their backup quarterback.
Like good for building a culture, but like I don't think this is sustainable.
Hey, next four games for the Giants. At Green Bay Packers, Baltimore Ravens, at Jacksonville Jaguars, at Seattle Seahawks, cross country trip.
Yeah, dubs are coming. Dubs are not coming. How often do you think we're going to see NFL football games where the winning team has 9 completed forward passes? How often? That's got to be like something that's not really part of the deal.
Round of applause for Justin Fields for having the most completions out of quarterbacks in a game.
It's true. 11, yeah. It is true. Again, they ran the ball 31 times with Saquon, basically out of necessity. But do a little thought exercise for everybody. Why don't you go look at the receivers that caught passes from Daniel Jones and Tyrod Taylor for the New York Giants? What they are doing is unsustainable. Right. It's just not, they cannot do this.
Stacking dubs, baby. Go right. Dable, go Shane.
And don't get me wrong, like I'm happy for Giants fans and like Chicago, like it's a rebuilding year anyway. But it's just if you look at the spectrum of NFL games that are played and like the stakes that are going to be there at the end of the year, that is why my words association was what it was.
But Kyle, you're not getting any of the answers you need to get, right? You're winning games, but you're not answering any questions, maybe other than Saquon. You're going to win too many games to make a justification on Daniel Jones.
Leading receiver Daniel Bellinger with 3 for 23.
That's right. Like two rookie tight ends this week.
Tanner Hudson, 1 for 18.
What do you have in Kadarius Toney? What do you have in Wandell Robinson? Like the young players.
They got to play first. They got to play first.
You're making the point for me. You're winning games right now and you're not answering any of the questions that you need to answer. So they're kind of empty wins because I don't think this is they're not running this team back next year.
Or reinforcements are coming and more dubs are coming for the Giants.
Look at Joe trying to
KT hits the stride. You got a receivers coming back. More speaking comfort.
I have a question before we move on.
That's your second. It's your second time out.
I know. Second time out. I apologize. Remaining in the show. What is Chicago Bears? What do you do with David Montgomery at the end of the year with Khalil Herbert rushing the way that he is?
Yeah. Well, they're in that good spot of not paying a quarterback, right? So you can justify paying a running back, but I wouldn't commit something long term, tie up my cap. Wait a minute. You don't pay running backs ever anyways. You don't do it.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Don't pay them ever.
Speaking of hitting their stride, the Philadelphia Eagles seem to be hitting their stride. 29-21 victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars. They are the last unbeaten team in the NFL, the top team in the NFC.
Wet. This game was wet.
It was. Which was weird because I watched the Jets-Pittsburgh game and it was not raining there.
It rained at my house all day yesterday. And Philly's about 45 minutes north of me up 95. So it can confirm very wet in the mid-Atlantic, even though it didn't necessarily show that at MetLife Stadium.
My prevailing thought from this game was just how quickly it turned around. I mean, Jacksonville was up 14-0, and you know, I'm watching this game or keeping up with this game while I'm watching the Bills, and I'm like, oh my god, like Jacksonville's up 14-0.
Wow, they did get a, they got a pick six. Well, as part of the process,
we talked about this. The three of us did, and I don't remember if it was on a show or off air, but we had this conversation of if the Jags go in there and beat them, and they're 3-1, does it make us reshift how we thought about the Philadelphia Eagles? And so I had that thought in the front of my mind when the game was on, and then the Jags go in there with Doug Peterson, and they go up 14-0 in a hurry, and it's like, uh-oh, maybe everything we thought about was true, and maybe this is not like the Eagles really soft schedule to start the year. They started 3-0, maybe they're and then it was like, nope, we're good. We can run the ball. Good luck guarding all the players that we have in our receiving core and Jalen Hurts and the running game. Good luck. Have fun. We beat you.
You if you're Jacksonville, though, you have to feel pretty good that your quarterback turned it over five times.
Yes, four lost fumbles.
You lost by 8 on the road to one of the best 3 teams in the league.
Well, I don't think you like the fact helps that your quarterback turned the ball over 5 times. I think you'd like him to not do that. But
sure, but that's the league. It's going to happen, and it's a wet day, and he fumbled 4 times.
Yes, and I think there's going to have to be some improvement for the sense of, you know, you had 219 yards of offense. You got outpossessed by 20 minutes, and Philly was only 4-15 on third down. Like you held Philly to less than 33% on third downs, and you still only managed to possess the ball for 20 minutes. So every time I looked up after the pick six, it was Philly had the ball, and then they rushed the ball 50 times for 210 yards and 4 rushing touchdowns. So,
all right, we got to run the 4-minute offense here and get through the rest of these games. The Bills beat the Ravens 23-20.
Comeback.
Yeah, Bills 0 in their last 7 one-score games dating back to the beginning of last year. So for them to come back, it was Josh Allen's first game-winning drive since Week 8 of 2020. For them to get a close win, all of that was meaningful for this Bills team to kind of change some of those narratives that were formed.
Chargers beat the Texans 34-24.
Near disaster averted. Crisis averted. Because Texans made this thing really interesting at the end.
They did. Yeah, they did. Herbert's a dude, though, man. Like, he ain't right. Still going out there, 340 yards, 2 touchdowns. Not much of a run game. I just have so much respect for him.
Chargers, Damian Pierce, third to last points allowed defensively this season. They're 30th in the league in scoring defense, conceding 27 points per game. So they got to get that thing figured out.
Again, Damian Pierce, draft dudes alum. Great game. 14 carries, 131 yards and a touchdown. The Cardinals, Panthers, 26-16. The Cardinals 2-2.
Who gives a shit?
That's the second.
The Cardinals' first lead of the year, right?
Yes, at the midway point of the third quarter, the Cardinals took their first lead in the regular season this entire year, because the only lead they had before that was the overtime when they took the lead for the end of the game.
So in regulation, this was their first lead in regulation all year.
Correct.
Yep.
Have mercy.
And it wasn't pretty. They won the game by 10. It was not pretty. Their offense don't have
a Panthers don't have a prayer on offense.
Well, you know, yeah, I think we're 1-26 now and conceding 17 points if you're the Panthers and you're like 0 for your last 25.
Can't do it, man.
Packers beat the Patriots 27-24 in overtime.
Crisis averted again.
This is my prevailing thought. Collect your prize if you had Bailey Zappe as the rookie quarterback that throws the first touchdown pass this year.
Not me. Is your prize his baseball cap?
I didn't have the bet, but I do have his baseball cap.
There you go.
The story for another day. The Raiders beat the Broncos 32-23.
Called it.
Crisis averted. The Raiders did not start 0-4. Crisis averted.
I got that one right. I said one of these winless teams was going to win, and somehow... I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I figured they were going to win this game, but sloppy football for both teams in that one.
The Broncos haven't beat the Raiders in like 7 tries or something like that. Is that correct?
That sounds potentially accurate. I watched a good portion of this game. Dude, the Broncos, it's just moving the ball is so difficult. And then they don't have Javonte Williams is hurt. It's just not great.
The Raiders have won 7 of the last 8 matchups against the Broncos. Mm.
Josh Jacobs in this game. Big.
28 carries, 144 yards, and two touchdowns.
Thank God Jamie Eisner told me to play Khalil Herbert over Josh Jacobs. Appreciate that.
Mm. Wow. Jamie's in the TDM Premium Discord dunking on all of his layup wins, like Tom Brady scoring 25 points in fantasy or something like that.
Speaking of Tom Brady, he played on Sunday night. Didn't go very well for him. The Chiefs beat the Bucs 41-31.
I'm just happy for the Bucs. They entered this game with three offensive touchdowns scored, and you know they found a way to double their touchdown output of the entire season in one game.
Very surprising, and not necessarily the outcome, but the fact that the Chiefs were able to run the ball in the manner in which they were against the Tampa Bay defense was very, 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 very surprising. Shout out rookie Isaiah Pacheco for some very strong contributions and running hard. I think that was a layer to this game I did not foresee.
How about the Bucs rushing offense? Really solid 6 carries for 3 yards.
It was a bad week to start Lombardi Lenny, but Lenny got in the end zone in the passing game. So nothing to worry about. They're fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Scout speak, gentlemen.
Is it time?
It's time.
Talk about the bubble.
It's tough. You go into this segment with one timeout left for the remainder of the show, and you've used two explicits. So who knows what?
I just figured once I used one, I might as well.
Just get your money's worth.
Right. Especially since it was the same lingo. So we're talking about running the bubble. Chris, would you like to set the table? Because this is one that you kind of flagged when we were doing our film study last week as something to talk about.
Yeah. So listen, I think everybody understands the role that I play on this show is I ask the dumb questions for people. And we were doing a film study of the Bengals offense. It was some advanced scouting for the Jets and for the Dolphins. And we were watching their game against the Dallas Cowboys. And Kyle, I love him to death. He throws around lingo with the expectation that I have any idea what he's talking about sometimes. And he kept just circling areas of the – no, I'm sorry. Take it back. He was not circling areas of the field. He was like, yeah, I should attack the bubble here. And then he would just, like, speed through the play. And then after, like, the third time he said it, I'm like, all right, dude, time out. I'll use one of mine here. Can you explain what this concept is to me? And we broke down a couple of plays, and we circled some areas of the field, and we got through the attack the bubble mindset when it comes to running the football. I hand the floor back to you guys.
Joe, would you like to, because you were not a part of that conversation, would you like to start with what you think of when that phrase is being invoked in the running game offensively?
Yeah, it's when you run the football, you want to attack bubbles. And bubbles are the gaps where there is nobody aligned in there, right? So you have natural angles that you could take
on the line of scrimmage.
On the line of scrimmage, yeah. You have natural favorable angles for your offensive linemen to take advantage of because they're leveraged, right? They've already leveraged that gap. And so when you run the ball, and it's particularly zone runs, these are going to be the most advantageous places to attack a defense when you want to run the football. And then, I mean, you can get into so many. That's probably a good place for me to stop.
Sure. No, I think that that is at its crux. We're sitting here watching Jets Bengals, and I'm sitting here asking, you know, why are they not running at the bubble? And instead you are counting on double teams up front to manufacture movement as compared to the organic space that exists if you are going to have a player who is playing on the second level of your defense be responsible for that gap. It's just common sense, right? You have more leverage in that position because you have somebody on the line of scrimmage and they don't. So if it's the run, Joe, I like that you acknowledge zone. If it's zone, absolutely. Even if that means you're going to run away from the strength, you know, if you have the tight end on the line of scrimmage to the right, but the backside of the formation has somebody who's a one tech on the center, and then you've got a defensive end who's outside shoulder of the of your left tackle, and then that stack linebacker is that B gap defender to the backside. Run that way, right? And give yourself a chance to. You're going to have a hard ask for your center to work across the face of a one tech, but as long as he hits that, you naturally have much more of a crease to get downhill between the tackles and run the football. Now, if you're going to run gap, and with the prevalence that we see of two high safeties right now, if you're getting lighter boxes, you know, if you're going to run 11 personnel and team's going to be a nickel, and they've got two backers in the box and your four down linemen, hypothetically, and then kind of your apex defender is the nickel corner who's out there. He can kind of get dug out by a wide receiver. If you have bubbles there, now you might be more inclined to run power. And, you know, anytime that you're counting hat counts on either side of the center, you divide the line of scrimmage right down the middle, and you count how many hats do we have defensively, and hats, I mean players, on the left side versus blockers and the right side versus blockers. And if you can pull a guard and run power and pull the guard that's on the bubble and not run the risk of a defensive lineman who is on the line of scrimmage immediately falling into your pulling guard's back pocket and chase that play down from the backside, you can get plus one to the half of the formation by pulling around and then try to gain the advantage in the box that way. So there's a couple different ways that you can identify the bubble and use it to your advantage. If you're going to run zone, specifically inside zone, run at the bubble. If you're going to run power, you know, take advantage of not having a defender capping that interior offensive lineman and have them pull around.
Yeah, I mean, that at its core is that. And what's fun is how what you can do defensively, right? Because you understand, right, that you're giving them bubbles. But whether you want to run some bare fronts and really kind of muddy up the middle and invite runs to certain places, like you'll see alignments defensively that are like, go ahead, this is where we want you to run the football, right? So there's a chess game that exists with that, because it's not as simple as, well, this is the bubble, we have advantageous angles, we should be able to create some movement here to create a positive run. But there's gap exchanges, there's alignments, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of things defensively that could be countered to kind of dictate and mess that up.
I'm glad you mentioned gap exchanges. I remember watching Zach Bond at the Combine a few years ago and watching them kind of play games up front and not necessarily run blitzes, but those designed, the defensive end crashes down and the linebacker automatically surfs out. And it's that design where, just like you talk about changing the picture for a quarterback in the secondary with your coverage shell and rotation at the snap, defenses in the front can do that too, whether that is crashing the defensive end down across the left tackle or the tackle's face down into the B gap. And now all of a sudden your bubble is off tackle, but the line is blocking as though the bubble is in the B gap and stuff like that. That was just watching Wisconsin and, of course, Jim Leonard, now the interim head coach,
bro,
of the Wisconsin Badgers. If we want to get some topical news in here for things that happened over the weekend, not sure that was on my bingo card that Wisconsin would be making a head coaching change, but Wisconsin and also Colorado, Carl Dorrell, relieved of his duties as well.
24 rushes for 2 yards against Illinois. That's going to get you fired at Wisconsin.
That's
right?
Not
to be a Lamar.
Great.
Man, my favorite, I played high school football, right? But my favorite plays were gap exchanges where I got to crash inside. And you know what that meant? I wasn't responsible for
outside contain. And just go get it and kill.
Anytime I got to shed that responsibility, I was quite happy about it.
You play a little faster when it's get to the mesh point, right? Instead of make sure you keep your outside arm free.
Yes,
don't crash down inside. Don't jump down in there. Stay patient. Funnel it back to your teammates in pursuit. All that. Nah.
Yeah, I like
44 crash is what we called it. Yeah.
Big fan. Big fan. You played some stack back. You played like hybrid kind of stack backer edge. So you lived in that world.
Yeah, we toggled between odd front and 4-4. So, well, if we ran 4-4, I was effectively the down lineman, and if we ran the bare front, then I was the stand up outside guy. But that kind of depended on if we were going runner or pass heavy for who we were playing on any given week. But just like your fantasy team, nobody cares about that, right? They care about not your fantasy team, the segment. Nobody cares about your fantasy team, which we will be back doing again this week, talking about another couple of players. And then, of course, everybody cares about what's next here on the show. We have our honorary dude back, Ray Garvin. So, Joe, why don't you go ahead and do the honors?
Well, folks, we are joined once again by Ray Garvin of the Draft Network. We had such a fun conversation last week. We figured we'd do it again this week. There are some people out there that are saying it was one of the all-time great conversations we've had in the history of Draft Dudes. So, Ray, welcome back, my guy, my dude. Looking forward to this.
Appreciate it, Joe. Thank you for having me back on, man. Really enjoyed myself last time and can't wait to chop it up with you both today.
Yeah, so sources indicating that I am one of those people calling last week's conversation one of the best that we've ever had. And I'm gonna steal the first conversation point here. And, you know, Ray, I'm sure you've noticed we didn't give you an inkling again on what we were talking about, but the organic nature of these conversations is what I think has the potential to be really special with them. So we've all kind of gone through our own player evaluation and learning the game and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to bring up the word potential to you. And I know you and your process in evaluating, especially, you know, through some of the Michael Pittman Juniors of the world. I keep going back to that video. It's a really great showcase of like historical data, but also being able to marry and watch the tape to that. Where does potential fall into this process to you? Because it is such an ambiguous thing to try to quantify for any given player, both at the pro level and projecting college players to the pros.
Man, you guys, no wonder you didn't give me a heads up, because I think even with ample time, this is a hard question to answer for me. I think potential definitely plays a part in the evaluation process, right? You have to look at where, not only where a player's at, which historical data and current data lets you know where this player is currently with their production, but you have to look ahead a year, 2 years, 5 years down the line. And that's with anything, right? There's no perfect process that can 100% predict this is who this player is going to become 5 years from now, 6 years from now, hell, 6 months from now. So I think potential definitely has to play a factor into the evaluation process. My question, and I throw it back to you, is when does it play a factor, right? Am I looking at potential from a true freshman, right? Their first game, they go out there and have a good game. And we saw ourselves do this with DJU to a certain extent when he took over for Trevor Lawrence versus Notre Dame a couple of years ago. And the potential, a lot of people, and I'm not speaking for you or Joe, were just like, oh my gosh, this is QB1 in 2023. And then, you know, of course, last season plays out. And then this season, I guess the question is, when does it play out? I want to see some level of production, something marred and combined with that potential, like a gumbo. It's if you've ever had gumbo, it's a slow process, right? You add a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you let it simmer, and then when it's done, hours later, it's fantastic. But doesn't taste good right away, but you know it's coming. There's that potential there later on. So I guess what's difficult for me is, at what point do I say, okay, I've seen enough. And even though this is not a complete and total picture of where this player, I believe this player may be, I've seen enough, there's enough data, and I see the potential, and a big name for that, you know, this year is, you know, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson. But when do you place the premium on potential? I think that's the better question, to which I don't really have an answer for that one, Kyle.
And Joe, I want to let you jump in here, but I wanted to give the context of why I wanted to ask this question, right? Because we have another TDN 100 update coming up in a couple of weeks. And I'm doing something different with my ballot this time, where I'm taking all the players that have made the first and second round of votes for me as far as prospects who I think are top 100, and I'm putting them in buckets, right? And I'm separating the guys that made the ballot in the summertime based off of their potential. And now I have to look at the sample size. We're a third of the way through the college football season. Mm-hmm. And I got to ask myself some hard questions on some of these guys as far as, are they living up to that potential? Are they showing next stages of that potential? And for some of those guys, the answer is no. And it's guys that had like second, third, lean three grades in the summertime that aren't going to be on the ballot at all the next time we do the update. So, Joe, I know you have plenty of insight on this as well, but I wanted to give that insight as Ray has kind of steered this conversation in a new direction.
Well, it's always something that is a challenging layer to the conversation. And I like that Ray kind of brought it to a timing point where it's like, all right, well, at what point do we need to see something tangible here? And it's interesting because you brought up Richardson and you brought up Will Levis. And, you know, we look back at some of the raw quarterbacks that are making it, and you go to Justin Herbert, you go to Josh Allen. And I would say for Josh, I'm not sure we ever saw it, right? Like, he just got better when he played against NFL players, right? Like, that helped him, obviously, with his own work that he put into it. With Justin Herbert, it was just a new exposure to new concepts allowed him to kind of unlock all of that potential as opposed to it kind of being harbored at Oregon. And so I feel like with Richardson and Levis, they're really at different points of the conversation, because Richardson, I think it's easy to say, well, he's got a lot more time that he can stay in college, where with Levis, you want to see it manifest more right now. And I think it has at times, but also there's still those moments from Will that leaves you kind of scratching your head. So I don't know, like, Ray, as you kind of process all of that and apply it to quarterbacks in particular, how comfortable do you get with both ends of the spectrum, where you know that the potential is there, but it hasn't shown itself in college, or you feel like the potential is there, but for some reason it wasn't able to be unlocked at the college level?
Yeah, Joe, you touched on something that I think is very important when we're talking about the distinction between potential with collegiate prospects and potential with NFL young rookies or early players, right? The collegiate potential profile for Josh Allen went out the window for me once the Buffalo Bills selected him in the first round. Like, at that point, they said, we're comfortable enough with whatever they saw internally to make him a high draft pick in the NFL draft. So at that point, I think the potential conversation changes to, okay, we know he's got the draft capital. I know that worst case scenario, we go back to that draft class. We knew worst case, Josh Allen had 3 years to figure it out for Buffalo to put pieces around him. And you could see that maturation take place through his work ethic, through bringing in from Stephon Diggs and equipping him with weapons. I think it's a bit different. Once the NFL has told me, like, we're okay and we're comfortable with making him a top 32 pick, I think the conversation shifts a little bit. When you're looking at it from a collegiate standpoint, what we're trying to do is we're trying to essentially project draft capital. We want to be able to, as a company, identify good players that are going to improve teams regardless of what the position is. So I think this is such a complex conversation with so many different layers inside of it. But, you know, there is a difference between the potential of Anthony Richardson, because right now, Joe, I don't know where he gets drafted, right? Like, I can say the tools and the traits, he's going to be a top 10, top 15 pick. But if he doesn't start to string together more consistent performances, I think that will impact his draft capital. And if he comes back, I think it's just a different conversation. And you definitely have to factor it in. You have to think long term. But I think when you're looking at the collegiate players versus an NFL talent, I think the potential there's a timeline on it for the guys in the NFL, for Jalen Hurts, for Josh Allen. We know that if they don't get it done by year three of their rookie contract, chances are they're going to go in a different direction. Whereas in college, like you said, we never saw it from Allen, but once he got drafted, it really didn't matter from that angle, because he was going to be afforded time and opportunity to figure it out.
Ray, let me flip this through a different lens of NFL players, right? Because I see you're rocking the star here on Victory Monday as we're recording this, right? I want to ask you about Tony Pollard, you know, because you're talking about rookie contracts, what players are capable of, and Tony Pollard has obviously shown a lot of productivity with the touches that he has, but Dallas, from a team-building perspective, is now at a very interesting juncture where at the end of this year, they're going to have to make a decision on Tony Pollard's contract in spite of continuing to have Ezekiel Elliott technically under contract, though they can move on from that. But then also the optics of, do we want to commit ourselves to another potential big money running back contract? So, you know, looking at potential through the lens of a player who has shown that he probably can be a lot more than what he has been, specifically Tony Pollard. Like, you as somebody who follows the Cowboys, where are you on Pollard, a new investment in Tony Pollard for the Cowboys, and what he's shown versus what you think he could be if he was undeterred by having Ezekiel Elliott in front of him?
You know, this is watching that situation play out. I think Tony Pollard is a lot better than a lot of people give him credit for. I know we know he's explosive, but I think had he truly had an opportunity to be a lead guy, which that's a whole nother conversation with today's NFL. What is that? What constitutes a lead running back, right? Because it's not the 25 plus carry a game guy that we saw 10 years ago. It's much different. But there's a reason why Dallas has not used Tony Pollard exclusively. And unfortunately for him, going into next season, he's going to be 26 years old. 26-year-old running back who has never, throughout his career, been utilized as a primary ball carrier, even going back to Memphis. Very talented runner, but he was always second fiddle to somebody, whether that was Darrell Henderson, Ezekiel Elliott. As good as he is, there's a reason why Dallas has said we cannot turn around and give this guy the ball 20, 25 times a game. Now, we can debate, are they utilizing him the correct way, given the amount of touches and opportunities that he has? And I say no, involve him more in the passing game. But do I see Dallas investing big money in Tony Pollard moving forward? I don't. I don't see that happening. I think if it's a team-friendly deal, if I'm Tony Pollard, I want to go get paid. I want to go at least have an opportunity to be the guy somewhere. It's just one of those situations where, I mean, it's the most replaceable position in football, Kyle. We're seeing them literally find guys off the couch, come in and run the ball. Kenyon Drake, you know, the Craig Reynolds of the world. And that's not to bash or disrespect those guys and their talent as football players, but teams can go find running backs. I don't envision a world in which Dallas spends big money on Tony Pollard. And I do think probably his last opportunity to really change his financial outcome for his family, he's going to want to get paid whatever he can. And I don't blame him, but I don't see Dallas investing a ton in Tony Pollard moving forward.
Ray, let me invoke three names, and I hope that these all stick for you. Alvin Harper, Peerless Price, and Deion Branch. These are all receivers that were traded for, I think all of them first round picks, because they were a really good number two receiver on a good offense. But when given the opportunity to be a number one, we learned that they're number twos, right? And I think it's hard sometimes for us to understand that with more opportunity, it's not just the production follows, right? Like it's, oh, you just give more chances. And so the same production that they had across 70 targets would be the same across 120. It doesn't work like that, right? Because of those ancillary factors. And I think about Tony Pollard. I think about Alexander Mattison, right? Another player that continues to flash whenever he has opportunities. Behind Dalvin Cook, what's he going to be like this free agency period? What type of opportunity is going to be there? But we have to be mindful of that, right? Where that it's not just a copy paste that what somebody did in a supporting role will be what they will be in a lead role, because the way teams game plan, the amount of tape that's out there on you, the not benefiting to being that complimentary piece. Like there's something to this.
100%. We just think that we could, you take one player out of a situation and you make them the focal point, or they assume this role of the one. And a lot of times, and I'm pretty sure without having the information in front of us, if we looked at those situations, Joe, from all across the NFL, it probably plays out in the negative than it does as that player truly assuming that number one alpha wide receiver role or that top RB spot. Very rarely have I seen that happen. Just crazy, just off the top of my head, in one situation that I know it worked out in the affirmative and in the positive direction is when Michael Turner, remember Michael Turner backing up LaDainian Tomlinson for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then he finally got his opportunity to be the guy in Atlanta. And it actually, he was the guy. He was pretty good in Atlanta for at least a season or two. I know that worked out for him, but across the board, it is not as simple as just Zeke gone, Tony Pollard there, Tony Pollard to the moon. Right. Again, there's a reason why Dallas has not has used him like that. And we can go across the board throughout the entire NFL and sort of say the same things.
Ray, the last question that I would have for you, and I have one in the chamber if you need a little time to think about this, but I wanted to ask you, kind of going back to the inspiration to ask this question and have this conversation with you, are there any players off the top of your head that you were optimistic for, either at the college level or the pro level, from a potential standpoint that you were maybe ready to stick your flag in the ground for and have not yet to this point, as we flip the calendar to October, seen that manifest itself and is forcing you to reevaluate what your opinion is of that player?
Man, you know, easy low-hanging fruit, and I'll be really quick on this, Isaiah Spiller is one that I thought his game would translate a little better to the pro game, right? We knew he lacked a lot of athleticism, but you watch the tape and you cannot tell me that he wasn't a good player at Texas A&M. I thought there were some things that he did well on the field, albeit a lack of athleticism, especially when you're standing next to Devon Achain, literally probably the most explosive player in college football. Isaiah Spiller, low-hanging fruit. A big one that just circles back to the original question about potential, and I don't want to rag on him too hard because he did suffer an injury, but Treylon Burks, and we kind of talked about him the last time I was on. It's like, man, you know, him, Laviska Shenault, Kadarius Toney, like we're trying to learn here and how to improve our process. And what's the takeaway and learning lesson from a Treylon Burks outside of the fact that I don't think Mike Vrabel wanted him in the first place, and I'd be pretty pissed if my team traded A.J. Brown away as well. But that's where I think I've been burned the most, you guys, on those potentials, right? On the Burkses, and I don't want to say I'm burned yet on Burks. It's still early, but Rager, Laviska Shenault, Kadarius Toney, Rondell Moore, he comes back, and what does Cliff Kingsbury do? The same stuff that he did before, throw it to him behind the line of scrimmage and ask Rondell Moore to out-athlete NFL defenders. It does not work that way. It hasn't been a good start for those offensive skill position players for me. And just, again, trying to learn how much do we factor in, man, what this player could be in the future compared to this is what's the issue with Treylon Burks. And Joe, maybe you said it. He's not a technical receiver. There are a lot of things that he needs to learn at the wide receiver position to be effective. And I don't care about the potential. I'm telling you what we're dealing with right now. He's not ready yet. And maybe that is the case. And maybe moving forward, we should take some of that into consideration a little bit more.
Ray, what you just described is why I'm bad at fantasy football. Like, I'm just not good at it. It's not. And people expect me to be good at it.
The floor with Joe this week.
I don't even know what happened there, but people expect me to be good at fantasy football. And I'm sure Kyle lives in this world too, right? Where like, oh, you're a football guy, you work in football, you should know everything. The reason I'm bad at fantasy football is because I fall in love with the potential and I fall in love with skill sets. And when I evaluate all the players that you just went through, I romanticize when watching their college tape about what they can be in the NFL in the right situation. And that gets me in trouble because you know what that doesn't equate to? Yards and touchdowns and catches, right? Like that's where I get in trouble, to kind of bring this conversation full circle in a way. When we started with potential, I fall in love with potential with players, and I'm not mindful enough of reality and how they're going to be used and what their pecking order is for that team. And I want to sit a lot more with the way I think it should be when there's a reality component that I often miss.
Well, Joe, and to tie that together with what Ray said about Isaiah Spiller, very scary when the Chargers tell you what they think of Isaiah Spiller when they go out and bring in Sony Michel.
Yeah.
Right? So, and the name that I had on my back pocket for a TDM 100 and a college prospect dynamic is Tyler Van Dyke from the University of Maryland, who was benched against Middle Tennessee State at one point. He's averaging just over 200 passing yards per game. Really struggling, and I understand that he lost his top wide receiver there after a couple of games, but Van Dyke was a guy who came in, and some people were putting him in the top 15 in mock drafts, and that was based off a 10-game sample size, and this was his first year as the incumbent starter coming in, and you know, the first month of the season has gotten pretty ugly for him, and he's a player who I I can't justify having a top 100 vote on.
Hey, Kyle, can I say too, from the collegiate side, 100% for me, it's, I'm just going to say these three names: Kayshawn Boutte, Quentin Johnston, Jermaine Burton. All three of those guys. I again, tethered to Bryce Young. Come on, Burton, be the guy. I haven't even heard his name called. Quentin Johnston, Max Duggan. Talk all the trash you want about Max Duggan and TCU. He's thrown for 350 yards a game. Quentin Johnston's got 9 receptions on the season.
Yeah, it's killing me.
I can't defend it, right? I cannot defend it with those guys. And Kayshawn Boutte, I'm watching LSU, and you can give me all the Jaden Daniels isn't a top-tier quarterback all you want. Malik Nabers looks better than Kayshawn Boutte. And it's hard for me to defend those guys.
Yeah.
Have 100% for me let me down, because I had Boutte as one. Johnston is a top three guy potentially, and Jermaine Burton, we talked about him as a first, just completely let me down this season so far.
Tight end Eric Gilbert with the Georgia Bulldogs is another one too, who there was a lot of excitement for coming into the season, and circumstances on and off the field there seem to be contributing factors, and he just kind of hasn't gained any traction. Joe, any names?
The receivers are the big ones for me. I know Jaxon Smith-Njigba's got an injury that's slowing him down, but it's just like, finally, we find ourselves going back to this over and over again. It's like Jordan Addison's producing, Marvin Mims, Josh Downs, but like for the most part, these guys are, Tyler Harrell has even played yet this year. It's tough, man. It's tough. They're letting us down.
We hope to not let you down. Ray, we appreciate your time hopping on with us. We hope this conversation didn't let anybody down, but that's actually going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks to our friends over at BetOnline for their continued support of the podcast. Kyle Krabs, Joe Marino, Ray Garvin, Chris Schubert signing off here on Draft Dudes. Make it a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you all again tomorrow.
Thanks for being here for another episode of the Draft Dudes Podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. While you are at it, help the dudes out by leaving a rating and review. Want more? Head over to www.thedraftnetwork.com or follow us at The Draft Network on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back to Money Mania, where we're talking tax season and what to do with that refund. If you really want your tax refund to have a positive impact, I'm bullish on Ohio's 529 plan. I always say, invest in something you love. Well, there's nothing we love more than our kids. So invest in their future and let your tax refund help. For as little as $25, you can get started today at collegeadvantage.com.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save big.